Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm chairman of the gas program at the OIES. It's my great pleasure to be joined today by my colleagues, Michael Maiden, who's director of the gas program, and James Henderson, who's director of energy transition. And they both edited the paper OIES Key Themes for the Global Energy Economy that was written by many OIES researchers and was published in January. Now, just to timestamp this podcast, we're recording it on the afternoon of Monday, the 31st of January, 2022. Michael and Jin, welcome back to the OIS podcast series.
Great to be back, David.
Thanks, David. Yep, good to be here.
Okay, Michael, well, can I perhaps start with you? Because, you know, the keen theme of the second half of 2021 was certainly rising energy prices, especially gas and electricity. So how do you reflect on the so-called energy crisis and the implications for 2022?
If we go back to 2021 for a second, I think it was indeed an extraordinary year for energy markets and energy prices. A strong recovery in economic activity, and that of course informed high demand for oil, gas, electricity. Supplies, however, for various reasons, both technical and also geopolitical, failed to keep up. In the case of gas, there was also questions of actually not managing to fill Europe's appetite for various, again, reasons. But this also happened to be the backdrop for COP26, and therefore raised the question about the role of the energy transition in this price cycle and future price cycles, but also really the issue of the affordability of the transition. And the Key Themes paper discusses these events, the 2021 events in different markets, the impact of price volatility. We see, for example, that in electricity markets, you know, the UK will be an important bellwether in 2022, where the question is not just whether price volatility is here to stay, but how effective is government intervention in markets, how public opinion is managed in this context, and longer term, what market design should look like. But tighter markets and questions around storage will all remain extremely relevant in 2022. In the oil market, the question is whether OPEC Plus can gradually meet its production targets, and as well as the extent to which demand will recover across sectors and geographies. In gas markets, the focus is, of course, on supplies into Europe. The Key Themes paper, we discuss the availability of LNG and look at some of the FIDs that are likely to be taken this year. That has implications, however, for supplies well into 2030. In the near term, FID starts could help meet some of the demand and replenish stocks, but that depends, of course, on what happens, not just in Europe, but also elsewhere around the world. So, you know, this interconnected picture of gas markets is one that we try to unpack, but of course we keep coming back to the same questions. The one that is top, that is front and center today, kind of the elephant in the market in terms of supplies to Europe, is of course Russia. And that, again, today more than ever is key.
Well, Michael, you mentioned Russia. So why didn't I come across to you, Jim, if that's okay? Because as Michael said, Russian gas flows are at the heart of the political and commercial debate around energy in Europe. So how do you see the outlook for Russian gas exports, both via Ukraine and, of course, the existing routes, and as well as the new Nord Stream 2 pipeline?
OK, thanks, David. Yeah, well, as Michael mentioned, we should probably start with a bit of 2021 context. So in 2021, physical flows of Russian gas actually declined, particularly in Q4. And obviously that's been cited as one of the reasons why prices have risen so rapidly in Europe and accusations have been flying. In fact, there is a perfectly logical commercial reason for Gazprom kind of optimizing, if you like, its flows, because it's many of its long-term contracts have prices which are now connected not to oil prices as they were historically, but to hub prices. So it's actually in its interest to obviously meet all its contractual obligations. This has been very keen to point out that it is doing, but not to provide any more gas to Europe, because obviously that would bring prices down, which would affect the value of its flows across its entire portfolio. Having said that, of course, there's the political dynamic we have to consider, not only the current situation around Ukraine, but also the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which you've mentioned. And there was obviously some feeling that Gazprom Russia was putting pressure on Europe via higher prices to make a decision to approve the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Now, we were expecting that, well, the regulatory process did start in the fourth quarter of 2021, but then was brought to an abrupt halt in November when the German regulator, Bonetza, basically decided that the company that was running Nord Stream 2 was not eligible because it was not a German-based company. So a couple of things we're waiting for then in 2022, just to look at the outlook. Firstly, we're waiting around regulatory decisions on Nord Stream 2. It looks like with that sort of delay of the approval process, we're not going to see any flows till the second half of the year at the earliest. And of course, the entire future of Nord Stream 2 is now somewhat up in the air, depending on what Russian troops do on the border of Ukraine. The other thing we're looking out for, and which was an interesting dynamic in 2021, was that the flows that were reduced by Gazprom really were flows that it was normally selling on its electronic sales platform or on the hubs. And those sales, those short-term spot sales, came to a complete halt in October last year. So another thing we'll be looking out for in 2022 is whether those sales, those spot sales, either on the hubs or more transparently on the electronic sales platform, actually return. And that will tell us quite a lot about Gazprom's strategy. So two things to look out for really in 2022.
Okay. Now, one of the other key themes towards the end of 2021, that of course was also the subject of one of our podcasts back in November, was the discussions at COP26 about how to limit climate change and the rise in global temperatures. So Jim, you know, how do you reflect on the outcomes of the conference that of course you were at and the implications for the energy sector and the key challenges for 2022?
Well, I think as we discussed on a previous podcast, David, the outcome of the conference was quite mixed. On the one hand, there were some positives. There were some big statements made about future ambitions by global leaders. There was a first mention of coal or a phase down of coal and a phase down of energy subsidies in the final document. And there were various multilateral pledges signed, which on important topics like methane emissions, like deforestation, and like the phase out of coal in power generation. However, the downside was that some of the messages were rather, if you like, downplayed because a number of countries didn't sign up to some of those pledges. And also, the message around coal was somewhat diluted at the end, with the phraseology of the final document being changed from phase out to phase down. So I think the key things to look out for in 2022 are what happens in the run-up to COP27, the next COP, which is in Egypt in November at Sharm el-Sheikh. And I think some critical things to look out for are, one, will the nationally determined contributions, which countries promised to update in 2022, are they really updated, reviewed, and are the targets ratcheted up? Because at the moment, the targets are not going to do enough to meet the 1.5 degree temperature target. So that's very important. Secondly, are some of the pledges that were signed going to see implementation? Are we going to see countries move on reducing methane emissions? Are we going to see countries move on phasing out coal from the power sector? Are we going to see more countries sign up to those pledges? And I think a third thing we really need to look out for is on financing. Because at COP26, the $100 billion target, which was meant to be met for financing from developed countries to developing countries, was missed in 2020. In 2021 at COP26, there was a kind of commitment to meet it by 2023. We will need to see that commitment being worked towards very significantly in 2022. And you can guarantee that at COP27, which is in Africa, obviously, that whole question of financing the developing world will be front and center. Not just to finance mitigation, but also to finance adaptation to the already changing environment and for loss and damage. I think those are critical things we need to look out for ahead of COP27. There are going to be various meetings, G7 and G20, but one final thing I'll just highlight to look out for in the near term is in February and March, the IPCC are going to release the second and third editions or reports in their sixth annual assessment. They're going to cover the vulnerability of countries to climate change, what's being done around mitigation, and what progress is being made on adaptation as well. And I think those reports are going to paint quite a stark picture, I think, and we could see quite a significant reaction from, particularly from developing countries, as they again force the issue of how they're going to be helped to meet the challenges of the energy transition.
Okay, well, Mikhail, perhaps can I come to you again? Because one of the main achievements of COP26 was the agreement between China and the USA to negotiate on climate issues in 2022. So My question is, how do you rate the prospects of a positive outcome on this issue? And, you know, what are the chances that environmental diplomacy can help ease tensions?
It's an interesting one, because if you look at the joint declaration, it is nowhere near as significant as the bilateral agreements that were signed before Paris. It is essentially the two countries reiterating a number of pledges that they've already issued. And the context, of course, is much changed. US-China relations are extremely fraught. The level of ambition domestically and the ability to implement pledges both in the US and China is challenging in very different ways today than it was perhaps before Paris. So 2022 is really critical, both in terms of climate action and in terms of US-China relations. The pledge, what it does introduce quite specifically, is a meeting on methane emission reductions, and one that should happen in the first half of 22, as well as the creation of a working group on enhancing climate action. Both of these could prove very positive for global climate efforts, especially if we get meetings that are not just sort of the chief negotiators meeting, but actually there's all levels of the administration, further down to local governments, academics. They will be extremely important for rebuilding trust between the US and China. And 2022 is a very important year politically in China. So there will be efforts to stabilize the bilateral relationship. So again, these meetings can do trust building and stabilize the relationship. But if the depth and breadth is significant, then the joint talks could actually move the needle also on climate efforts and increase ambition and momentum ahead of COP27.
Well, Mikhail, can we stay on the subject of China for a minute? Because, of course, China's 20th Party Congress is coming up in November. So what are the kind of key energy plans in 22 for China? You know, can we expect any major shifts in policy?
You know, major shifts compared to what, right? Because we've seen China pledge carbon neutrality 2 years ago and then seem to walk it back a little bit after the energy crisis. But I think if we go, you know, 2022 is indeed a politically extremely significant year. It's a leadership transition and Xi Jinping getting an unprecedented third term in power. So stability really is paramount. On the energy front, there are a number of reasons that it will be important. First is that we are going to get lots of additional policy papers and documents, sectoral five-year plans, including the energy plan, trajectories for peaking emissions for both companies, provinces, sectors, so a lot of paperwork. There will be adjustments to the carbon market and probably a tightening of rules again, so lots of indicators on how China is managing and guiding its energy transition. But because 2022 is all about stability, some of the regulatory momentum from last year, and last year we did get a lot of power pricing reform and tax crackdowns on independent refiners and stop to tax evasion, all of that could actually slow down. With the economy decelerating, which of course means slower commodity demand growth, there could actually be some adjustment in terms of growth support, of sort of economic activity towards the second half of the year. We've already heard from all the government statements that the focus is on energy security, on stability. That means more coal-fired capacity additions. It also means more of everything else, but of course headlines tend to be a little bit one-sided at times, but certainly coal is key for China's energy and even within the energy transition. The mixed messages that we've been talking about quite a bit all through last year, they will continue. Again, both coal for stability, renewables for sustainability. It will be down to a question of pace and whether implementation this year sets us on a path of peaking emissions well before, sort of just before 2030, or actually closer to mid-decade.
Okay, so let's return the discussion to the energy transition, Jim. Can I perhaps come back to you? Because one of the emerging trends in the past 12 to 18 months has been carbon neutral LNG. And this kind of raises the issues both of emissions in the gas export value chain, but also, of course, the accounting and the trading of carbon offsets. So these are two themes that you've highlighted for 2022. So I was wondering, could you, for our listeners, expand on what the main issues are?
Yes, I think we need to break down what we mean by carbon neutral LNG and look at both ends of the value chain. And indeed, our colleague Jonathan Stern has been doing just that from a sort of an upstream and supply perspective. So looking at methane emissions particularly, but actually, as he would define it, greenhouse gas emissions in the production and transport of LNG. Now, there are around 30 cargoes or so, slightly more than 30 cargoes so far delivered of carbon neutral LNG, mainly to Asia. But I think the problem we've seen is there's a relatively limited transparency around what emissions are being measured and what offsets, therefore, are being used to turn these into carbon neutral. So I think for 2022, what we really outline is that there's really a huge need for transparency to increase around the measurement, reporting, and verification of the greenhouse gas emissions themselves. And indeed, our colleague, Jonathan Zern, would rather redefine carbon neutral LNG and call it greenhouse gas verified LNG, i.e. what emissions are you looking to offset in the entire LNG value chain to the border, if you like, to the delivery point on the border of the importing country. And I think that, we need to see the kind of standard benchmark methodology put to one side and to see much more individual transparency for each export route during 2022. So indeed, I should mention, there have been some attempts already by Pavilion Energy, by Gignall and Chenier to move us along that path. So I think in our key themes, we're really looking at those attempts to improve reporting to continue in 2022. If you're looking at the other end of the chain and the offsetting, one of the other major achievements of COP26 was the finalization of the rules around Article 6 for carbon markets, both for trading in compliance markets for emissions, but also in the voluntary markets for offsets. And that really is the catalyst, I think, for much greater trading of offsets now that the accounting rules or some better guidance has been provided for the accounting rules. We're already seeing higher volumes and prices. We think that's set to continue. We think that a two-tier market for fully adjusted and non-adjusted credits may emerge, because we think that some countries, the rules imply that you need to offset from one country to another any emissions that are traded. And so we think that a two-tier market may emerge. We'll have to see if that happens. But I think that we need to keep a close eye on how voluntary carbon markets do develop in 2022. And certainly that's one of our key themes in the paper. One other thing worth mentioning outside gas is that even in the world of oil, we're starting to see a differentiation between grades of crude based on their carbon intensity. And another of our key themes is to look out for the carbon intensity premium that is starting to emerge between different grades of crude oil and whether that trading continues to take off in 2022 as well, because certainly a number of the benchmark providers are looking to increase the amount of transparency around that too. So it's another thing to look out for in 2022.
Okay, now, of course, another important theme for the Institute is, of course, hydrogen and the associated technology of carbon capture, utilization, storage, or CCUS. And these, of course, are both subjects of research by the Energy Transition Initiative at the Institute. So, Mikhail, can you tell us what you see the outlook to be for hydrogen and CCUS in 2022?
I mean, with hydrogen very much underpinning many assumptions and business decisions about the energy transition, you know, I think it's viewed both as the panacea and the holy grail of the energy transition to a certain degree. The Key Themes paper argues that projects will really need to start taking FIDs in 2022 if we're hoping to meet 2024 and 2030 targets. And really it sets out some of the parameters to look out for in order to see whether or not we're on track. Related to that, of course, is that blue hydrogen projects will probably be needed to supplement green hydrogen developments, at least during this decade. But that might be complicated by regulatory approaches, as we discuss in some of the other key themes on sort of European regulatory frameworks. And that, of course, relates to carbon capture utilization and storage. Another Key Themes paper argues that actually what we're looking out for in 2022 is, again, the UK is a bit of a bellwether, and whether this year we'll see greater momentum for investment in CCUS. It will be telling if, after a number of false starts, a viable business model emerges in the UK for CCUS, and again gives us some hope, even though these are two slightly different trajectories, of course, for CCUS and further on for hydrogen.
Okay, so both of you, you know, as we near the end of the podcast, let's kind of turn our attention to a couple of other regions. Now, Europe has been at the forefront of the energy transition, and more regulatory changes are expected in 2022. So, Jim, can I come to you and ask you, perhaps, could you share with us some of your views on the prospects here in Europe?
Certainly. I mean, 2021 was the year when we saw the Fit for 55 overall package published by the Commission. And within that, there were an awful lot of proposals, many of which need to be finalised in 2022 and negotiated. I mean, they included proposals on topics such as a broader emissions trading system, a definition of blue hydrogen, new emissions and renewable targets, new transport and industry fuel targets, and basically proposals on a sort of new rules for energy taxation as well. So those things are all going to be continue to be discussed in 2022. And we've also got regulation, the 10E regulation around infrastructure for cross-border electricity, for natural gas, for CO2, for hydrogen transport. And that's very, very important because the definition of what can be included for the award of a project of common interest is vitally important for investment in all these areas. So those are critical things for 2022. The other thing that's going to be hotly debated, I think, is the EU taxonomy, what is defined as a sustainable fuel. Right at the top of the list for debate are the inclusion of gas and nuclear. We know that in the draft they are in, but there is clearly debate amongst countries within Europe about whether gas should be in, you know, as a hydrocarbon, a carbon-emitting fuel, should that be included in the EU taxonomy or not. Those countries that are switching from coal to gas still argue it should be. Those that have made that switch and are more heavily focused on renewables are arguing that it should not be. And then, of course, the perennial argument about nuclear, which is a sort of carbon-free, if you like, in the production of electricity, but has other environmental issues around, of course, waste. So that debate is set to continue in 2022 as well. And we're also looking out for issues in various countries. Germany still talking about coal phase-out, and the Netherlands potentially ramping up its nuclear program. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I think another topic we raise on electricity is the question of electricity market design. We think 2022 could be a year when we see a real interesting debate about whether the current electricity market design is fit for purpose. We think that higher power prices and the associated gas price could well focus attention on this issue. There's an ACER report coming out in April around the market design. And, you know, we have been long advocates of a two-tier market design, an energy-only sort of market, and then a market involving more government intervention around capacity auctions, et cetera. We think that debate will continue in 2022, and we'll have to watch what happens there. So I think that a number of issues to be raised in Europe, again, as you say, as it continues to be at the forefront of the energy transition.
Okay, Mikael, so can I kind of turn to you now, and perhaps we could talk about India for a few minutes. You know, what do we expect to see here in 2022, and what are the implications for the country's energy transition?
It's the not-so-great story from India in 2022 is that it is likely to miss its renewable capacity target, a target set in 2015 for 2022, and that will not be met. At the same time, India has raised already ambition on its new targets for 2030 and beyond. But in order to effectively meet those, India needs financial stability. It needs investments in grid modernization and flexibility. These are all things that we will be watching in 22. In a way, they resonate with the broader themes in the electricity market that Jim just mentioned about the optimal regulatory model, market design, of course, it's not the same systems, but these debates are global, and it's interesting to see exactly how they play out in different markets. It also sort of echoes China in that the tensions between the long-term climate and environmental objectives come up against short-term fiscal stability, and of course it will be that short-term fiscal stability that will be the focus for 2022, how that plays out and how that informs the longer-term questions we will be watching.
Okay, so both of you now, let's kind of pull this podcast together by looking for some final conclusions and perhaps major takeaways. Mikael, why don't you go first and then I'll come to you, Jim. Mikael, what's your view?
I think this interplay between the short-term market dynamics, how they inform public perceptions, how they play into long-term policies on decarbonisation, remain a key theme, not just for us at the Institute, of course, but for the energy industry as a whole. I think the other element is the shared goals, but differences in approach, and also in starting points around the world, which to me highlight really both the real world as well as the conceptual challenges of the energy transition. I think these issues really underlie many of the contributions in this key themes document, and will be something that we continue to think about, not just this year, actually, but for many more as well.
Okay, so Jim, maybe come to you. So what are your kind of final conclusions and major takeaways from the 2022 OIES gas and energy transition themes?
Well, with my energy transition hat on, I would say that it's quite easy after a major COP like COP26. I mean, every fifth COP tends to be a major one, and Glasgow was billed as a major one to review where we were. It's very easy for policymakers, politicians, and indeed the world at large to take a large sort of deep breath and move on and sort of kind of forget what was agreed. But I think that's not going to happen in 2022. And I think 2022 is going to be a year when we are reminded again and again about the pace of change that is required and the amount of change that is required and the impact that's going to have on the energy system. I think those IPCC reports in February and March are going to be another wake-up call. I think that the fact that COP27 now has some fairly major things on its agenda to review, particularly the nationally determined contributions from countries, is going to be, again, a highlight as we go into the second half of the year. And I think the constant need to monitor the pledges that were made in the multilateral agreements around methane, around the removal of coal from power generation, around zero emission vehicles, which I haven't really mentioned, I think those things are going to come up at various meetings through the year. And finally, I think that the real kind of debating point may well be the financing of the transition in the developing world. And I think, again, these IPCC reports are going to highlight how much money is needed to be transferred to the developing world, where most of the emissions are happening, but there's not enough money to deal with them. And I think that that could well end up being another major theme as we head into a COP in November in the developing world in Africa.
Well, thank you, Mikael and Jim, so much for your time today. As always, you know, I really enjoyed our conversation that certainly summarises and indeed builds upon the paper OIES Key Themes for the Global Energy Economy that was published in January. I hope you have all enjoyed listening to this podcast today. May I draw your attention to the gas and energy transition pages on the OIS website, where you'll find our papers, reports and podcasts, and indeed articles of interest. So thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.